Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm opening the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Thursday, May 14th, 2015. We're going to start off today with a public hearing on House Bill 3251. And Beth, can you have you give a little description of this bill?
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 3251, and I'm speaking to the Dash 1 amendment, would prohibit a manufacturer or retailer from selling or offering for sale a covered product unless it is labeled with a brand that's included in a stewardship program plan approved by the Department of Environmental Quality. And covered product has a fairly lengthy definition that you can see in the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much. And so we have two folks to kick us off, Scott Clegg and Jim Quinn, both from Metro. Welcome.
I'd also like to have Abby come up in a moment with us.
Right now, yeah, Abby, come on down.
Ask a question.
You may.
Would it be fair to say this is a Metro-sponsored bill, Madam Chairman?
I think that would be fair to say.
Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Chair Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Scott Clegg. I'm a senior planner at Metro, and we're here today to talk about the concept legislation that we helped develop, HB 3251, to provide household hazardous waste stewardship program for the state.
And it's my understanding we're talking about the Dash 1 amendment.
We're talking
correct?
About the Dash
okay,
1 amendment,
thank you.
Yes. We had worked with legislative council on the first version, and we learned a lot from that interaction and came back with a version which addressed some of the technical issues that LC had identified for us. So we think this is a good place to start the discussion with the Dash 1. So I'll be turning this over to Jim Quinn, who's our hazardous waste program manager for Metro, who's going to talk a little bit about what household hazardous waste is and how Metro, a little bit of history on the issue, as well as how Metro has addressed it. Then we're going to have Abby Garris from DEQ talk just a little bit about what the state of Oregon has done with regards to this program, and then I'll wrap up with a little high-level discussion of the elements of the bill. So, thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Chair Vega Peterson, my name is Jim Quinn. I'm the Hazardous Waste Program Manager at Metro, and I wanted to talk a little bit about household hazardous waste, some of the risks, how it's regulated and managed, why I believe product stewardship is the right direction for it. So what the heck is household hazardous waste? So here's a picture. I think a lot of this stuff will look familiar. Just about everybody probably has some of these things in their garages, basements, sheds, that sort of thing. So we're talking about things like pesticides and herbicides, solvents and thinners, some of the stronger cleaning products, camping fuels, flammable home improvement products, a wide variety of items you may have sitting around your home that really shouldn't be going in your trash. A lot of people may not realize that a lot of these products are hazardous. They might be flammable, corrosive, chemically reactive. There might be environmental toxins. They might be poisonous. A lot of the things we're talking about here are the culprit in home poisonings. They can cause or contribute to fires in the home. So there's a lot of risks at home. There's also risks in the solid waste system. I often see reports about reactions in trash trucks. Garbage workers are exposed to it, incidents in transfer stations. So there's a lot of risks in the solid waste system, a variety of other environmental and health risks posed by these products if they're not properly handled and disposed of. So as far as regulations, way back in the 70s when Congress did the so-called cradle-to-grave regulation of commercial and industrial hazardous waste, they did not tack on household hazardous waste. When EPA put forth their regulations in 1980, they specifically did not include household products in their regulations. But we're talking about the exact same stuff that if it came from an industrial or commercial source would be regulated. It comes from homes, maybe in real small quantities from each home, but in aggregate, we're talking about a very large amount of material. And EPA explicitly acknowledged in their rulemaking that they were not neglecting it because it's not a risk to the health and environment, but simply because that's not the focus of the law that they were implementing at that time. In fact, a lot of these products, when they're disposed of improperly by some of the stores, some of the big name stores that you probably go into and buy these products, if they're not disposed of properly, EPA does zing them. There have been some very large fines, many millions of dollars of fines in recent years for some of these stores that have had these products and needed to dispose of them and done it improperly for one reason or another. So we're talking about the same stuff, but coming from a home, it isn't regulated. So how the heck is it managed? So shortly after EPA said that this stuff isn't going to be regulated, local and state governments stepped into the breach and said, all right, we're going to set up our own collection programs. You can see all the cars here. That's cars queuing up for a household hazardous waste collection event. That was an early and common way of collecting these products. The first ones were in 1981. The first collection events here in Oregon were 1983, actually, just a couple years later. And at Metro, we stepped into it in 1986. Lane County as well did their first collection event in 86. So for many years, this is how household hazardous waste was managed, was at these collection events. In 1989, the Oregon legislature said that Metro, required that Metro establish permanent facilities. So we went ahead and did that in 1992 and 93. We opened our two permanent facilities. That's actually when I came aboard at Metro, so I've been involved with the program since that time. Our program has grown a lot over the years. Today we're serving something like 55,000 customers. And by the way, it's a combination of the events and then permanent facilities. We have two permanent facilities, which are a lot of the waste that comes in are managed through these. We manage one of the largest programs in the country, actually. Very few places have more customers coming out. You might have heard of the paint recycling aspect of our program, Metro Paint. You might have seen that in some Miller Paint stores around. All the latex paint that we collect, and actually other latex paint collected all around the state, we recycle into a product and sell it. So that's one piece you might have heard of. But all of this comes at a cost. Metro's net cost for managing the household hazardous waste we collect is about $4.8 million a year. And that's what leads to thinking about product stewardship. So the state and local governments have taken on responsibility, but under product stewardship, it's the manufacturers and distributors of the product that would take on a share of dealing with these products at the end of their life when they need to be disposed of the leftover products that people don't need anymore. So why do we think that this is needed? Well, there's still an awful lot of the stuff that's not getting properly managed. And here's a picture of one of our transfer stations. And so you can see some various bottles and containers of hazardous waste. A lot of the stuff is still making its way into the trash. We know that from waste composition studies that we do where we carefully analyze the trash coming out of our stations and we found hazardous waste in there. We know that because we're pulling it out in our operations. We know that because we get big lines still at our events. No matter how convenient we make it, it seems like there's still more people who want the service than we're able to deliver it to. So the bottom line is there's an awful lot of the stuff still sitting around in people's garages and basements. So even though we've done our very best to collect and manage the stuff for nearly 30 years at Metro and elsewhere around the state, we believe that having the manufacturers step up and share responsibility is the next step and is really the future of the program. We do have a couple great examples here in Oregon of product stewardship programs, one for e-waste, computers, and so forth, as well as the paint program here in Oregon that's been going on for nearly 5 years. That's done a great job of collecting a lot of paint around the state, and it's also saved us at Metro nearly $1 million a year in handling and disposing of that leftover paint that's collected. So we think that's a great model. Of course, we customized to the type of product that we're talking about here, the household hazardous waste. But really, we see that as the next step in really finally and fully addressing that problem that we've been wrestling with for 30 years. And by the way, the public, at least in the metro area, definitely supports this. We did a survey, found 87% of the people we surveyed expressed support for the manufacturers taking on responsibility for handling this stuff at the end of their life. So we believe that the industry should step up and share in that responsibility. So I'm going to pass it on to Abby from DEQ to talk a little bit more about the statewide system out there. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have everybody know. We'll have lots of time for questions. Lots of time. Go ahead, Abby. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Peterson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Abby Badouris, and I have terrible laryngitis. I'll do my best. I'm sorry.
I know what that feels like.
Too much talking, I guess. So I am here today partially from my work as a former position as the Household Hazardous Waste Coordinator for the state, and in my current position representing the Materials Management Program for DEQ. I have had the privilege to work with these two men for many years in that position in Household Hazardous Waste. While DEQ, I want to make clear, is neutral on 3251-1, I will share an overview of DEQ's role in Household Hazardous Waste and some of our perspective on product stewardship. The primary purpose of the Household Hazardous Waste Program is to minimize risks from household hazardous waste to Oregonians and the environment by reducing the generation of that material and to ensure the provision of household hazardous waste collection services, making sure we address the most highest risks first. Our program began in the early 1990s. We provided collection events throughout the state and distributed educational material. In 1999, we really shift our focus to increase and using grants to increase the local collection infrastructure throughout the state, building facilities and helping the locals provide collection events. Progress has been made through those efforts, and in 2013, 88% of Oregonians had access to at least one comprehensive HHW service, with 71% of those having a permanent facility in their county or access to it. The newest facility is in Tillamook County, and in 2011, we had facilities open that served Union, Baker, and Wallowa counties. Clatsop and a Coos Curry facility are in development. If you look at the map, you can see the blue areas have access to permanent facilities. They're open multiple days a year. Some, like the Metro facility, they're open many days a week, to some that are open once a month or as low as 8 days a year, but regular and known service. There is an interactive version on the DEQ website, so you can see what days are open and how to use those facilities. Unfortunately, though, given declines in the revenue in the solid waste program because of decreasing disposal fees, DEQ has suspended most of our household hazardous waste program. I will note that Senate Bill 245, that's now in Ways and Means, if passed, will help us restore some of those programs and to have HHW grants and help with collection programs in areas where there is none, in the yellow particularly. And I think I'm going to make it. Maybe Scott might have to read. But to take a broader view, I do want to connect this to the 2050 vision for materials management, which guides the materials management program in Oregon. And it includes actions in that direct us to reduce the life cycle impacts of materials through product stewardship, including sustainable production, information dissemination, product standards, and take-back programs. And we have long considered product stewardship, take-back programs, as an important strategy to reduce impacts. And you guys, I did send a copy of a report that we did, I believe it was in 2010, 2011, that we did send to you, this committee back then, that lists really the eight important components that we think should be considered if and when a product stewardship program is rolled out. So as the agency that has the responsibility to oversee some product stewardship programs, our experience has confirmed that one size does not fit all when doing these programs, and that extensive stakeholder outreach is necessary and needed before anything is rolled out, and we are willing and anxious to be part of any such conversations. I will end there. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Representative Boone, do you want to go?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, and sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Jim Quinn.
Jim. About the paint care program. When this first rolled out some years ago, we were told we were not allowed to know how they spend all the money, and they had a pretty good size account. And I just wonder, because I don't always hear that it's a great program, and especially in the Tillamook County area, there's been some issues, and I just wondered what is happening with that and how you can tell me that it is working. Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Boone, I can speak mostly to Metro's experience, not a statewide experience. Okay. I don't know if Abby can address that or some, but at Metro, it's been a great relationship. It's saved us money. It's provided a lot more convenience for our residents, and it's been a great thing for us. So we have no complaints about it. As far as
that's good,
yeah,
good to hear.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative mm-hmm. Boone, the legislation that passed in 2013, the second round, mm-hmm. has helped make some improvements in the transparency of the information and the collection convenience standards. So we recently approved their new plan. Although I will acknowledge there have been a lot of challenges, I do feel like it's on an upward trajectory. We have much more information, and there's actually a stakeholder meeting at the end of the month, which will be sharing the latest annual report, and looking forward to how they can continue to improve.
Follow up. So are you going to find out how they spend all the money?
The annual report and then some supplemental information that they provide to DEQ does provide a pretty clear picture of where the money goes.
Final
question.
It's been my experience and from what I've heard from my constituents is that they don't do the collections in Tillamook County. The county does them, but they don't get paid for it. And it would seem to me that if PayCare is not collecting, that the county is collecting, the county would get that money.
So Representative Ager Peterson, Representative Boone, there's been finally some progress in Tillamook County. It's been a concern of mine. I believe they have now signed up some paint stores and signed a contract with the county to reimburse for them for some of their paint processing costs. So I know things are better, and we have been very much watching that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
We're going to hear from the rest of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
Once again, my name is Scott Clegg. Chair Vega Peterson. My name is Scott Clegg. I'm a senior planner for Metro. I just want to take a couple minutes to go over some of the high-level elements of the legislation and the amendment as it was proposed. Abby mentioned that there was a stakeholder group that was done several years ago back in 10 and 11. Metro participated, helped in on that, and a lot of what the prime elements that we're talking about here address those things that were brought up in that process to make sure we design a program that's good. So we're at the beginning. Well, we recognize that we're at the beginning stage of a process to develop a good stewardship program for household hazardous waste. We think that this bill is similar in many respects to some of the elements of the Oregon eCycles programs and some to the paint program, but we recognize that one size does not fit all. There are differences in the types of products that these programs cover and in the nature of the industry that manufactures these. So we want to have this stakeholder process to include the manufacturers and local governments and the state and others to address some of these issues before we actually pass a law. But we wanted to get started with this conceptual legislation to get the dialogue going. So at a high level, the products to be covered is one of the key areas. One of the differences between the version that was introduced and this version now is that we laid out in the Dash 1 amendment a pretty specific process for what products would be covered. We look to federal regulations from Resource Recovery Act, RCRA, as well as U.S. Department of Transportation regulations, so identifying specifically what materials are reactive and corrosive and toxic and such, so that we think that that process can be held to good science standard of what is a hazardous waste and what isn't. And so the other part of this is this program that we're proposing here, this legislation would cover those relatively more hazardous products. There are a number of areas of products that the bill specifically says it won't be included. These include some things that might have programs that could be take back to retail, for example, some pharmaceutical things. So the program specifically excludes household batteries, mercury thermostats, mercury containing lights, including CFLs, and like I said, pharmaceuticals. The idea is that there may be other stewardship programs that could be set up where both our facilities as well as maybe some retail take back might be an element of. So this program is focused on the more high hazard kinds of materials that would need to come back to a more secure, dedicated either event or a facility. If you remember Jim's first slide, there were a lot of these containers that can be quite leaky, and you don't want to just have these returned to retail. So that's an important part of what we're trying to accomplish with this. The other elements of the program of the legislation that in looking at programs that have occurred before, the e-waste program, the paint program, other programs around the country and in other areas, we've drawn some lessons and tried to include those in the legislation. And amongst those are having clear program and performance requirements and issues, as Representative Moon mentioned, about transparency about how the organization is operating. We know that the need to provide convenience service in every county is critical, and we want the support of the local governments around the state, and we think, you know, having that, one thing that's in, you'll notice in the bill, there are some blanks in what level of convenience there should be, how many events in some of the lower populated counties in that. We think that's an area where a stakeholder process can talk about those issues and what would be a good fit for different parts of the state in terms of a level of convenience. We look to the e-waste program, which we think is effective in certain ways, because there are specific targets that the manufacturers have to make. Each of the manufacturers, the program looks at what materials are collected by, you know, by brand and says, well, these kinds of materials are coming in. So there's agreements about what the targets would be. So we think that's a good thing to pattern after, not models directly, but to look at how can we, for the different products that are covered, that come in, how can we set targets for these programs, for the manufacturers, so they know what they have to achieve. Also, one of the differences, and more like the e-waste program than the paint program, is that this would function under a financing model called cost internalization. And by that, we mean that there wouldn't be a specific fee set up for each of the products. It would be like the e-waste program, where each of the manufacturers or groups of manufacturers meets their targets and then figures out amongst themselves how they're going to pay for the cost to manage those. If it's a more high hazard product, maybe the manufacturer that makes that has to pay a little more into the stewardship organization fund to cover that. But the government would not be involved in the setting of assessment fees like the paint program. So we think that that is a model worth discussing during our stakeholder process. Also, very important is to support the current infrastructure. We've seen from the map of Oregon and Jim's discussion that there's a lot of collection and facility infrastructure in place, and we want to make sure this program builds on that, doesn't replace that. So that'll be a key aspect of the program going forward. Finally, to link into what Abby said a little bit about the materials management and 2050 process, while this is primarily an effort to collect these materials and manage them properly, we know that, you know, over the long run, we really want to tilt the playing field toward providing the manufacturers, you know, incentives and benefits for putting products on the market that don't necessarily need this type of management. We recognize for the interim, this is going to be needed to be done, and it's costing a lot of money, so it's nice to have the manufacturers come in and share on that. Finally, talk a little bit about the next steps after this hearing. I've mentioned a couple times that we want to undertake a broad stakeholder engagement process. Metro is going to step up to help initiate that and get that started. There needs to be some additional background work, white papers describing, you know, some of the problems and the issues. And we know we want to include a broad group of stakeholders, as I mentioned before, local and state government, the waste industry, the haulers and the recycling community, product manufacturers, retailers. Oh, I did want to mention that this program does not anticipate that the retailers would be required to take anything back. They could be involved in the public education efforts in this. So we know there's going to be a lot of questions from stakeholders, from industry, wondering about what are these definitions and how do you apply them to specific products, as well as local communities on what defines convenience. So that's kind of a high-level overview. We have given for the record a little one-pager about some of these elements that I talked about, a little more detail, but maybe easier to reference, that you might want to go back to and look at some of these issues that I spoke to about cost internalization and infrastructure and such. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present today.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Holby.
Thanks. I'm curious about the cost of these sorts of programs, and you know where exactly the cost is. Is the bulk of the cost in terms of is the cost at actually having a center that's or a facility that's open to the public to come and drop it off, or is the cost really in handling the product once it's been dropped off? You know, and subsequent to that.
Peterson, Representative Holby. I might turn to my colleague Jim Quinton here to talk about that a little bit. It is a little bit of everything, but maybe he can quantify that a little bit for us.
Chair Baker Peterson, Representative Holby. Yes, Scott said it's a little bit of everything. There's cost to keep the doors open and the lights on. There's cost for the trained staff that would handle it. There's cost for the packaging and drums and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, paying a disposal contractor to haul it away. So there's costs across the board. I don't know if that answers your question, but
no, follow up.
Follow up.
Yeah, I guess the reason I'm asking that question is because I know that, you know, I'm from Lane County, and they have a program there that is open twice a week, Thursday mornings and Saturday mornings, I believe, but it's by appointment only. So, you know, though it's there, it's really not very convenient for consumers or customers who happen to be cleaning out their garage and go, oh, I've got all this hazardous waste, but I never made an appointment. Now I'm going to have to... You know, and so it doesn't happen. So because it isn't very convenient, and it seems that, you know, that's so absent that the consumer's sitting around with it forever, laying around because it's not convenient to drop off. And so that drop off seems to be, you know, one of the reasons it either ends up in the landfill or just sits around for an inordinate amount of time. And so it's, you know, it's like the customer is sitting there storing it forever because it's not convenient to get rid of it, or they dispose of it in the landfill. And that's why I asked the question, where is the cost drivers really in operating a program, you know, because it seems like it's really important to get it out of the customer's hands, out of their garages, and out of the landfills. But, you know, as opposed to what do you do with it after they've dropped it off to you? I guess that's kind of the...
Yeah, Chair Vega-Peterson, Representative Holby, I think you put your finger right on a very core part of all this is the convenience. And what we're envisioning here with this program is being able to ramp up that convenience so that everybody would have an easy way to get rid of this stuff. As far as the cost, yeah, it really is proportional to the amount of waste you're handling. The more waste you handle, the more it costs. So that's really what it comes down to. There's maybe a fixed cost for keeping the facility open, but your costs really depend on how many customers come and how much waste they bring. So right now, you know, your program is only laying out a certain amount of money. What we envision is with manufacturers sharing responsibility, there would be enough resources to ramp that up to the point where it really would be convenient for everybody.
And just one final follow-up. And well, the reason I ask that is because the facility is right next to the landfill transfer station, which is open 7 days a week all the time. And there's that facility sitting there, but you can't drop your hazardous waste materials off. you know, and so it just seems like, is the cost really at keeping the lights on, because the lights are already on in the adjacent building? And, you know, and so it's, you know, is it the FTE, you know, I don't know. It just has never made sense to me why that facility is not open to drop it off, at least to get through the initial stages of getting it out of the landfill and out of the consumer's hands.
Representative Rudin.
It sounds like Representative Holvey and I spend our Saturday mornings in really exciting fashion, but... So I was actually out at the South Metro station just a couple weeks ago, and great service. Mm-hmm. I think it was $5 to get rid of a whole bunch of paint cans and other miscellaneous stuff. So I'm happy about that. But also, but the hours were really limited, I think 9 to 4 or something like that. So there have been a number of times when I haven't had been able to fulfill my fantasy of dumping hazardous waste. So that's coming down to a question. Do you ever survey folks and try to get some idea of their price sensitivity and hours of operation, stuff like that? Because I...
Yeah, go ahead.
Chair Reagan Peterson, Representative Reardon. We have looked at the price sensitivity quite a bit. The $5 fee that we came up with, we put a lot of thought into that and decided that it was a pretty small barrier to people coming, and the number of customers continuing to come to us after we implemented that bear that out. Much more than that, and I think it would impact the people actually bringing us their waste. So it's a nominal fee, and by the way, it's only a very small percentage of what it costs to serve the average customer. The average customer is more than $50 to serve, so it's only a small percentage of the costs. But we think that it's about the right price point. Any more than that, and I think it would be a barrier to people coming. As far as the hours, we're open 6 days a week, 9 to 4 at our permanent facilities in the metro area. We supplement that with collection events around the region, and actually we provide more convenience than just about any other program out there. But again, what we're envisioning here is ramping up that convenience and getting it to the point where everyone would find it convenient, and we could really, you know, have everyone get rid of the stuff they're sitting on at home. And that's really what this is all about.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm coming back. I keep coming back to trying to understand the problem. I understand Metro has some costs associated with this, you know, handling the waste, making sure it's properly disposed of, and so forth. But if you get outside of Metro, like where I live in my district, I'm not aware of any compelling issues. I have access to hazardous waste disposal at my transfer station. It's there. It's available. My constituents aren't complaining about the lack of availability and so forth. But again, I'm trying to look beyond this and see, is it more than just simply another Metro has a problem and now they want the whole state of Oregon to share in their misery? Because that, frankly, is what it looks like to me. But I guess as I look at the details of the bill, I mean, you're talking about some major transformations that will empower DEQ to have some incredible power, particularly, I guess, in Section 8, where you say, in accordance with applicable provisions of Chapter 183, whatever, the department may issue an order requiring compliance with provisions, and the department may bring an action against any manufacturer, stewardship organization in violation of these provisions. These are some major expansions of agency power that I don't think Oregonians are looking to give them, and I just wonder why you feel you have to take this. I mean, we talked about the paint recycling program earlier, but this is paint on steroids, if I might say.
Chair Vega Peters and Representative Johnson. With regards to the interest in this program outside the state, I think we looked at some of the numbers about how much is collected elsewhere in the state, and we're collecting quite a bit here, and proportionally we're seeing quite a bit less from some of the DEQ reports collected elsewhere in the state. There could be a lot of different reasons for that. I think that is one of the things we'll look at when we start up the stakeholder process, is to look a little closer at, you know, what level of services are out there. I think it's a good question to find out how do people, you know, elsewhere in the state, would they like these services? I think that from my understanding, and maybe Jim can address it a little bit, he works with the different communities of facilities across the state. I think that would be important to know, what is the level of service that other folks around the state would like, and what the program. With regards to the DQ Power and Authority, I think what you're looking at is fairly standard language that was in both the paint and the e-cycles bill, which has to ensure that it's a level playing field for the manufacturers. I mean, that's what DQ has to be able to bring in people into the manufacturers if they're selling into the state into that. I'm not aware that either in the e-cycles program or the paint program that that's been an issue to go after the free riders from manufacturers that aren't participating. I think this is the kind of a program where people are, the manufacturers are saying that, yes, this is the statute, and we'll join and comply. So, but that would be something would be looked at very carefully to see, you know, what's the appropriate level that's needed to make the program effective, of level of DEQ authority to make it effective.
May I add something?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. So I mentioned waste composition studies. That's where we get our hands on the trash that's actually going into the transfer stations and landfills and see what it's made up of. That way we've looked at that in the metro region, and DEQ has looked at it around the state. And I can tell you there's a lot of hazardous waste still going into the trash around the state. In fact, more statewide than in the metro region. We've made more progress on keeping out of the trash than the rest, much of the rest of the state has. So there's a lot of the stuff still going to the trash. So I believe there's a demand for this all around the state that isn't being met.
You mentioned that there was, you had public support. You did some sort of polling or sampling or whatever, but did your polling also discuss at what greater cost the participants would be willing to bear for this service, i.e. both in the cost of the products that, as they're going to be for sale, because obviously retailers are going to be impacted, but again, additional costs in terms of the waste disposal at the local level?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, our survey did not specifically ask about cost just about support for the concept.
Okay. Abby, could I ask you a question if you have enough?
Follow up.
The bill also, it talks about a credit trading system, okay, for noncompliance and so forth, i.e. low carbon fuel standards or back into credits again for bad actors. Has the department had discussions about how this would be administered and at what cost to the agency for doing this?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. The DEQ was not involved in the drafting of the original bill or the draft, the dash one, okay. So we have had no opportunity
Thank
yet.
You. Mm-hmm. I won't ask any more.
Did you want to respond?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. Yes, that was a concept that we put in there because we knew that in the electronics program, when you have the targets, it's nice to be able to say, well, what if I overcollect this year relative to my target? So we viewed that as a place to start the conversation about if you're going to have the system of goals for the manufacturers. We want it to be, you know, flexible that, you know, something like that might be possible. That, I don't think, came up right away in some of the electronics e-cycle stuff, so we wanted to get that kind of out to be discussed right away. And you're quite right. The question is the lemon worth the squeeze, so to speak, about the cost to manage a system like that, to be discussed. Thank you.
So thanks. We have a couple other panels, but I did have a couple questions. So can you talk a little bit about what the costs are of not doing a program? I mean, like, what's the status quo now in terms of, I think that's the problem. Like, this is going to be a huge change. We've heard that talking about. Could you go into a little bit more of you know, what we're dealing with in terms of costs to communities of not doing this?
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. I think since we're doing a pretty good job in some aspects of the state, I think we're looking at trying to expand it. So one way to look at the cost is to say, what's the cost of not expanding the program, and then what's the cost of the opportunity of cost of having, you know, a certain section of the population via the rate base now cover this. We think that both the reduction to what is the direct cost to local governments being paid for the by the manufacturers would be a great benefit. And then we think that some of the risks and issues that Jim identified in terms of poisonings and fires and that, people have looked at those over the years. They do exist. It's hard to quantify and measure them. But we do think that the cost-benefit aspect of this is, you know, is on the benefit side.
Okay, and then I think the other question I have and has also been brought up is just, you know, when we look at these programs and where they're, it's how do you create a program that has the best fit for all areas of the state? And I think that's the key here, and I think that's something that if you go forward with the stakeholder groups is you know, something that works in the metro area where there's a huge population and you know, a five-mile drive can get you, you know, three different options for recycling, which I think is, you know, what we have when we're dealing with all our stuff on the weekend. It's one thing, but you look at some of the counties here that aren't, don't have anything right now, you know, with local programs, and it becomes a totally different thing. So I would just encourage you as you go forward to really try to figure out, because I don't think that we've actually been as successful as we can with the other programs that you're, you know, you're basing this on. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you all very much for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
So next we have Mike Dewey and Kim Kaminsky. Hi. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, Mike Dewey on behalf of Waste Management. We're not here to opine on the Dash Ones. We're here to talk about a program that Waste Management has. Waste Management is the largest solid waste collection company in the United States and the largest recycler in North America. So we have some programs and a lot of expertise in this area. We also operate a hazardous waste landfill in Gillum County. Some information that we have provided you is also on OLA, so you can take a look at that. Kim Kaminsky is with me, and she is going to talk about At Your Door, which is a household hazardous waste collection system at your home. And we have in this brochure, I think you have, this is Representative Ritterman's house.
Yeah, we have it up here on the screen. Yes. It's also on
so there,
OLIS forever.
So there you go.
That's whose house?
And so Kim will discuss the program. It's very unique, and it's pretty much in its infancy, but this is a way of looking at it from the standpoint of being able to make it easy, Representative Holvey, for folks to have collection of household hazard material. So Ms. Kaminsky will speak to the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Kim Kaminsky, and I'm the Senior Government Affairs Manager for Waste Management. And as Mike Dewey just stated, I'm here to talk about our At Your Door collection service, which manages household hazardous waste, or what we like to call it as home-generated special materials. But before I get into the details about our At Your Door collection service, I did want to just touch on why we might support a product stewardship legislation or why we may not support a particular product stewardship legislation. In general, Waste Management supports product stewardship for what we call toxic and or hard-to-handle materials such as electronic waste, pharmaceutical waste, paint, mercury-containing lamps, and such. What we do, and those types of materials actually do not have adequate collection or funding systems in place. What we do not support is product stewardship for materials that are traditionally collected at the curbside, like paper and packaging, because those are handled very well by our systems in place. We have recycling and solid waste infrastructure that collects these materials very well. And what we generally look for in supporting a product stewardship legislation is the incorporation and use of the solid waste infrastructure, whether it be public or private. We also look for payment of reasonable compensation to service providers by manufacturers for the collection, transportation, recycling, reuse, and/or disposal of the materials. We also like to see curbside services recognized as a valuable and appropriate collection method, and we also like to see them identified as a way to meet the convenient collection standards. And finally, we generally like to see performance measures in the legislation and some type of reporting to DEQ. Now, as Mike alluded to, our At Your Door special collection service, and you've got our brochure up there. It is a door-to-door program. You could call it, I guess, a valet service for household-generated materials. And generally, the materials that we pick up are household cleaners, automotive products, garden chemicals, electronics, paint products. There's actually a list, I think, on page 3 of the brochure, which actually gives all the materials that we generally pick up. It also notes what we don't pick up, which is like radioactive materials, highly reactive wastes, commercial materials. I wouldn't say the list is necessarily exhaustive, but it's what we mostly pick up. Now, a city or county can decide to offer the At Your Door collection service, and what we would do is we'd sit down with them and we would develop a solid waste rate that would include that service. And the great thing about this program is that it's available to the residents year-round. They can call the service at their convenience whenever they want those materials picked up. And so how does it work? Well, a customer in a participating community would contact us via the website, or they'd call us, or they would email us. And then we would discuss the quantity of materials and the type of materials that would need to be picked up. And then we would send out a special containment kit. And this containment kit contains a plastic bag, which is not your typical plastic bag. Your garbage bag, it's actually a very thick type of plastic that protects the materials from the elements. And we also set a special collection day, and we tell the customer to put it out by 7 a.m. that day. We tell them also not to put it out by their solid waste or their recyclables, so those wouldn't get mixed up. And the customer does not need to be home on that day of their collection. So it works very much like garbage and recycling pickup. And we found that our customers like this. It's a very convenient way for them to pick up their household-generated special materials. So when they have their special collection day, we have an experienced and trained service technician that comes out in a special truck. And that, you can actually see a picture of the truck on page 4. So that's our typical truck that picks it up. And so our technician picks it up, they secure the load, and then the household generated materials are actually taken to a special site, approved site, and our site is subject to inspections. And again, as I said, our customers have found this a very convenient way to recycle their products. And we generally do recycle the materials. Some are disposed of, but typically we tend to recycle. And the materials are stored until our processors pick them up for recycling. But that's usually on a regular basis. I mean, we maintain contracts. So really, this At Your Door service is optimal for any type of community, whether it be urban, suburban, rural. We also service single family and multifamily. And currently, right now, we have this service. It's very popular in California in several communities, including Laguna Beach and San Ramon. And we'd like to see this service offered in Oregon. And we also believe that it can help state and local government meet their recycling and diversion goals. So I thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today about this service.
And please, if you have any questions.
Yeah, thank you. This was really interesting. I had no idea that this kind of program existed. Just funny, because in Portland, you could pretty much get anything recycled, including you have to recycle all your food waste, but not necessarily this piece. But it's really good to know about that. Do you have questions? Yes, Representative Holby.
I'm just curious, what does it cost, proportional to, I guess, the garbage bill at the end of the month. I'm sure you charge your customers a monthly service or charge for this.
Right. So it would be part of the rate structure. And, of course, it's distributed across all the people in that city. So we found it actually is not a huge price differential for us. And it's also across the entire year. So, and again, I think the biggest driver for us and impact is that the people in California that have this program, they just find the convenience above all the most, the best thing about the program for them.
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, and we can get you some numbers. If,
yeah, just some examples.
Yeah, and we can get some numbers in terms of what the average bill was and what the additional cost is. What we have done is we've started this very slow, you know, in the sense to see how it works, mm-hmm. how often do people call up so we can get an idea about what the rate should be. And then, of course, it's levied throughout the entire base. Mm-hmm. But we can get you some numbers. And then we'll be having conversations with the franchisors that we operate with about the program. And obviously, there's a public process. We see this somewhat intertwined with the legislation that you're having this information hearing on. And so that might be a part of this, you know, conversation. But we're not here to endorse any legislation at this point in time, but just to provide you an opportunity to see what we're doing in these various cities.
And I just want to say, too, if legislation such as this, the Household Hazardous Waste Stewardship Program, were to be adopted and a community already had this at-your-door service, we would actually go back and adjust the rate because based on the manufacturers paying compensation to us that as a service provider.
And I would just add one of the significant costs is the handling side of the equation and disposal of what can't be recycled. You have a higher cost on that side. So that's a significant component of a program.
Mm-hmm. I just want to go back to what you said for a second there about, so do you have any communities where you're doing this where there are stewardship programs in place?
In California, yes.
You do.
As a matter of fact, you know, you hear about Paint Care. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a very good relationship with Paint Care in California. So, and we have contracts with them. They compensate us for the pickup of paint. And this is part of our At Your Door program. And then, again, the rate was structured to adjust for the compensation that we receive from Paint Care.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just for clarification now, is in California, is it available to those who would like to do this on like a a la carte menu? I mean, you want the service one time, but you only need it once a year. You can do it on a special occasion, or you could just subscribe to it on a monthly basis and have that fee added to your base bill. Is that correct?
It is part of the general rate.
It's just
rate.
A part of
so
it.
So you could take advantage of it one time. You could take advantage of it quarterly, once a month, whatever works best for you.
Philip.
So, Representative Johnson, for you, it'd be a heck of a deal.
I'm sure it would be. Okay. So going forward, I was going to go with something else here. What part of Oregon is currently serviced by waste management? How much of the state would have access to this if this program became available?
We're in Multnomah County significantly, Clackamas County, Washington County significantly. We're in Yamhill County. We're in, thinking about counties now, further west of Washington County. We're in Klamath County. And so we have a significant collection base. Okay. We'd like to be in more jurisdictions, by the way, but that's another issue.
Maybe as we get out of here, you can make your presentation to our friends at Metro, and we don't need a bill. We're done.
We know Metro very well.
Although it'd be interesting to hear what, you know, some of the groups like Recology and other companies are, if they have something similar.
In other parts of the state. Allied has a significant presence, Recology and Waste Connections. Okay. And then obviously there's a number of smaller operators that are discrete in a community.
Mm-hmm. Representative Reardon.
If I read this bill, maybe I'm not understanding it correctly, but it looks like it. Does it require a special label be affixed to certain products so that they know that they're part of the hazardous waste stream that would be collected? And if that's true, if this proposal requires some labeling, does your service require some kind of a label?
Yes. So I didn't actually state that in my presentation, but we do require that the materials be in their original container and labeled so we know exactly what it is that we are picking up. It takes the guesswork out of it.
Clarification. Mm-hmm. I'm reading this as a special label that
as an additional
manufacturer
labeling
has to put on the products, but are you saying it's not a special label, it's by the homeowner writes on there that it's acid?
Well, we'd actually require it to be in their original container.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Representative Reardon, there's I don't know if you have the Dash 1 amendments.
I don't.
Okay, so, and I think that, I'm not sure if that was something that was carried over from the original or not.
So there is a label or not?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't look at the bill that closely, but I know there's a significant difference between the original bill and the Dash 1.
Label would seem pretty onerous.
It's actually under a brand.
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, the bill doesn't require any special labeling by the manufacturers. It has to have a brand so you can tell who's responsible, but it would be determined when we're talking about what the manufacturers are responsible for by what products they sell into the state. In the sense, it's a little bit like the bottle bill in that the manufacturers, OBRC, get my words mixed up, goes through and figures out what products are covered under the bottle bill. You can do that by looking at the product, and this program would do that. It wouldn't require the manufacturers to do anything special.
Okay.
Whereas the bottle bill, you have to end up putting that 5 cents on it. The Stewardship for Hazardous Waste wouldn't have that, so there's no special requirement.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you both very much. Okay, for our last panel, we have Alex Schiebel, Mike Fries, and Scott Dolman.
Save me some trips to the hill.
Is there anyone else here who'd like to testify
in
the bill?
Yeah, me both.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries with Associated Oregon Industries. We know that the bill isn't planning to move, and we just thought this was a good opportunity to have kind of a general conversation about product stewardship and the proposal in front of you both. I won't go into the detail on the Dash 1 or I wasn't sure which bill that we'd be talking on, so just kind of want to keep that there. But I think as a preliminary matter, we weren't really approached about this, and so we weren't really sure until the testimony what the intent of the proponents were for the bill. And as a result, and because of limited time, we don't really know exactly what it's going to mean for retailers and for manufacturers. In fact, when I pulled up the CFRs that are identified in the Dash 1s and looked at the products that are covered by the bill, it's exhaustive. And so I'm not entirely sure what products now would be included in the proposal. So just keeping that in mind. Generally, AOI doesn't believe that for its manufacturers and retailers that a one-size-fits-all approach will be effective not only statewide but potentially even at local levels across the state. And the kind of all-encompassing approach as in front of you, as the proposal is in front of you, will probably be unnecessarily expensive. And so we need to take some time to really look at what consumers are going to pay for through the process. And there are currently, as you heard, some voluntary and localized programs that are effective. We need to better understand the problem before we can be in a position to offer a consumer and business-friendly solution. We welcome the opportunity to work with proponents on the stewardship concepts into the future. Thank you.
Chair Vega-Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Scott Dahlman. I'm the policy director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter. We're a grassroots coalition. We're made up of farmers, foresters, and other pesticide users. Our members also include pesticide manufacturers and distributors. So all throughout the chain, our members would be affected by the proposed legislation. Like Mike mentioned, we were unsure of exactly what we were going to be speaking to today, so I won't get into the details of the proposal that's on the table, other than to say from a pesticide perspective, we think the Dash 1 amendments are a very poor fit for pesticides, but look forward to having a further conversation about stewardship. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is that there are extensive pesticide stewardship efforts going on already that I'd like to make you guys aware of. So in addition to the household waste collection facilities that were mentioned earlier, there are also pesticide collection events funded through the pesticide stewardship partnerships, which are funded through pesticide registration fees. And just since July, there have been 8 pesticide collection events across the state, with a 9th scheduled for Dallas next week. Those are specifically with the pesticide stewardship partnerships, and then they have also supported an additional 3 local events. So there will be a total of 12 events just since July across the state to do pesticide collections. These are both for the containers and for unused product, outdated products, that type of stuff. There were over 181 participants and over 100,000 pounds of product collected. So these are effective efforts that are being done out there already and need to be considered as we look at anything new going forward. So with that, we welcome the conversation about pesticide stewardship, but have some concerns with the proposal that's on the table right now.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Alex Schiebel for the American Cleaning Institute. I will say that we submitted comments in the testimony, or based on the original bill, not the Dash 1. So one of the major concerns that we had for household products is really what could be brought in, what products are going to be covered by this. So I think that's something that we'll have to very much pay close attention to, because we could create a real problem that will raise costs, and I think that's an important point that's brought out on some of the prior questionings. Similarly, from the prior testimony, you know, there are existing systems that are out there. Sounds like there's some problems. They're not open enough. They're not convenient enough. Do we need a whole new system, or can we address these problems, these issues, through what we already have in place? And lastly, you know, there's the credit system that was identified in the bill and the underlying bill, very detailed. But then again, in the next new version that they will develop, is that really solving the problem? Is doing a credit system? I mean, we've got systems, we've got facilities. Let's see how we can solve that problem. So we welcome the conversation. We look forward to more discussion on this.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Thank you all. So what I'm hearing is that if discussion's going forward, you're interested in taking part in those discussions.
Right. Yes.
Thanks. Thank you very much. All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3251, and we are done for today. We have a bill that wasn't quite ready to work, so we're moving that over until next week. So with that, I'm going to close the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee.